It's showtime.
Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. We are off and running with yet another broadcast in this final week of September. It is the 25th of September, 2018. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where we live. And that, of course, is where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, madcap, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. Just pick yourself out a screen name and a password, hop right in, and you will be, you'll have a darn good time. Had a good crowd last night. One probably assembling now. We don't have a tardy bell or anything, so folks just wander in as they see fit. Anatole, an early arriver there, and of course, you will be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, well, he's folded space today to become man cave, which means it must be a lovely day in Northern California. We had some thunderstorms blow through and whatnot, but here a little bit ago. But it is it's squishy outside, but the sun's broken through to close out the evening, make everybody feel a whole lot better. And we have an absolutely perfect 72 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion compound. Yes, hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic Tuesday. Boy, is it ever Titanic Tuesday. I mean, well, thank yous first. Thank you to Kay in California. Thank you to Jim in Spain. And thank you very kindly as well to Asa, not Brother Deacon Asa, different Asa, for their subscriptions. Thank you very kindly. Subscriptions are how we make it through the month here. And when everything goes right, we close out the month with fundraising free radio, which we are in the middle of right now. So with the thank yous having been extended, that's pretty much it. Beyond that, the luxury of not having to fundraise this week. And it feels really nice, I gotta tell you. We are up and running, and I'm seeing a little buffering on my end. Hopefully it's not translating. But, we're up and running. Two stacks of coal smoke a-puffin' atop the Titanic Horn train, Senor Bob says, Brother Deacon Asa. Mixing your metaphors there a little bit, aren't you, Asa? But that's okay. She was a coal burner, the Titanic was, and so we're rocking and rolling both on HeadOn.live and the White Rose Society stream, which means that everything should be running nicely from Stitcher to TuneIn to Roku to White Rose to HeadOn. We ought to be in good shape all the way around. So yay. Like I said, Titanic Tuesday. Oh, brother. Titanic Tuesday comes after Moran Monday in such a way that quite often we find ourselves carrying over Morans into Titanic intellect. I saw something today, and apropos of nothing, this is just a mention, over on social media. Well, everybody knows I'm a big fan of Jason Isbell, and I saw some of the most pathetic trolling, some of the most attention bleating that I think I've ever seen on social media. And this is Titanic Tuesday, so it fits. Like I said, it's not momentous, it's not earth-shattering. We'll get to momentous and earth-shattering in a minute. What it is more than anything, how do you explain what Titanic intellect means except by example? And this was so it. So apparently, Jason Isbell played a huge show in Charlotte, North Carolina recently. And this right-wing turd, a woman by the name of D.C. McSomething or another, who fancies herself a writer of some sort, got all butt hurt and went after Jason Isbell over the content of his song, which you've heard on this program, White Man's World. It is a brilliant lyric. It is incisive. It partakes of a deep understanding of both history and culture. And it talks about not just white privilege in terms of ethnicity and race. It discusses the colonialism and what was done to the indigenous people who lived here that, you know, got genocided. And it speaks to issues of patriarchy and gender. You can go and listen to it easily. It comes from his album, Jason Isbell and the 400 Unit, The Nashville Sound. But, you know, right-wing... delicate little right-wing types apparently don't handle being confronted by the realities of history and culture very well. No, this isn't, of course. I'm presuming you've heard enough so far about the Cosby sentencing. We'll get to the slimy world of Brett Kavanaugh soon enough. But I found this particular little interchange fascinating because this plaintive, whiny white wing nut just tweeted relentlessly at Jason Isbell and said, you know, I went to see your show and I didn't like your white guilt song. Oh, for pity's sakes. This, of course, Jason has literally thousands more followers and fans than this pathetic right-wing troll. and they went after her. Mostly nicely. A few people used some choice language. And she proceeded to, I mean, by the time I got to the thread, what she called a Twitter feud, to which I think Jason had responded twice, which was probably two more times than she deserved. She'd apparently sat up all night long doing righteous battle with Jason Isbell fans and reporting people for suggesting that she was a, you know, right-wing nut job, which she was, is, whatever. And talking about how there's no place in art, but, you know, for propaganda. Utterly clueless. You can go and read it for yourself if you want to. I'm not going to go there. It's just, Jesus Christ. Stupid does not begin to describe it. Except for the fact that in her profile it says her philosophy, don't meddle. And of course that's exactly what she was doing. Yeah, I know. So, I mean, like I said, apropos of nothing. But it was just funny to see these weird little a weird little white wing troll going out of what passed for her mind over the lyrics to a song. And yeah. Thank you very kindly, Stephen. New York says loud and clear up my way. Good. Good. That means the packets are passing. So I guess, since we're going to talk about Titanic intellect, you may recall Titanic Tuesday was born years and years and years and years ago when our buddy Jim happened to tune in to right-wing radio over in Beckley, America's fifth smallest radio market. And caught the morning monotone fielding a call from one of his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing faithful who asked him, Steve, how come you read... You know, up to that point, he'd been reading them the newspaper like he did every morning. It was pathetic. Steve, how come you reckon it is that there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? I done seed them when I was down in the mines, and we ain't nowhere's near the beach. And Steve, of course, responded with probably a lot more monotone than I can even manage. Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Ah, yeah. Titanic plates. Still no word on the whereabouts of the... running out of, you know, after all these years, I think I'm finally running out of implements for the Titanic table. Oh, we've been through egg poachers and knife sharpener. Still no word on the mention, no word on the whereabouts of the Titanic knife sharpener. We'll just throw that one in there. Someday historians will go back and, no, they won't. But that's where Titanic Tuesday comes from. And so we dedicate Tuesdays here to instances of real Wile E. Coyote, Acme, super genius, Titanic intellect. The kind of intellect that says, hey, there's an iceberg. Let's sail straight at it. Let's play chicken with an iceberg. Well, Ron's out in front of me. Subject line, Shecky Trump at the UN. Wait a minute, Shecky Trump. Yeah. Long way from the Catskills. Well, let's check in with Shecky Trump there at the UN today. He went to threaten and saber rattle and, well, the assembled folks there at the UN didn't treat him with much dignitas. That's 2 days in a row we've used the Latin word dignitas. Here's what happened.
Today I stand before the United Nations General Assembly to share the extraordinary progress we've made. In less than 2 years, my administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country.
Now he said that, really. Because the man is just a great big jiggling adipose wad of misgivings, self-doubt, and fear, with a big old side helping of stupid and ahistoricity along for the ride. The President of the United States, like other world leaders, gets to address the United Nations. And tells the United Nations how awesome he is. Oh my God. Okay, this time I won't interrupt. He was trying to be so grave. He was trying to be so severe. He was using his squinty face, and they'd put on a little bit of extra foundation or concealer or something, so that his little white goggle circles from his tanning bed sessions weren't quite so evident. And he's got his 72-year-old man toddler scowl on.
Today I stand before the United Nations General Assembly to share the extraordinary progress we've made. In less than 2 years, my administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country.
Okay. I mean, it's not like this is Jeopardy or anything, but I'll take, who's Abraham Lincoln for 1,000, Alex? I'll take who's FDR for 10,000. Hell, I'll take who's Barack Obama for 100,000, Alex, considering what he began doing in the first 2 years of his administration. Or, you know, how about a video daily double of who was George Washington? Just kind of invented the idea of the presidency by virtue of having been the first occupant of the office. Who's Thomas Jefferson? Who more than doubled the landmass size of the United States at the stroke of a pen and at the price of about 3 cents an acre. I mean, damn. But who's James Madison? Got himself into a war of choice, but somehow or another managed to not lose the infant nation in the process. Yeah? Yeah? I'm just brainstorming. Who's JFK? Who put together a vision of a country that would go to the moon, not because it is easy, but because it is hard. And we choose to do difficult things. Great God in heaven. It's mind-blowing. Because, see, the thing is, you know that this mental defective in the White House actually believes the shit that he says. And the mental defectives who follow him believe it, too. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but there is an obviously photoshopped picture going around that came out of Hurricane Florence and the aftermath thereof, that shows Trump in a suit reaching out of a rubber raft to take the hand of a person stranded in floodwaters by a chain-link barbed wire fence. That thing was shared over 250,000 times by the mental midgets who follow Geezer Disgustus. The photograph in question, and I realize that talking about a photograph on the radio is like dancing about architecture. I get that. But the photograph in question is actually of rescuers helping people out of floodwaters during flooding in Texas back in 2015. But on September 16th, 2017, a year ago or more, a little more, it was uploaded and had Donald Trump dummied into it, riding a raft on floodwaters in a business suit, mind you, and rescuing some dude. And the maggots shared it 250,000 times or more. What did the caption say? You won't see this on the news. Make it go viral. Maga, 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 maga. Okay, I added all the magas. And some portion of them, it is statistically impossible that they didn't, some portion of them actually saw that and said, Trump is such a hero and loves America so much, MAGA. That's probably a $10,000 MAGA suit, MAGA, MAGA. MAGA. And there he is, rescuing one poor person from the floodwaters of Florence. MAGA. Oh, MAGA. If tomorrow all the MAGA I had was taken away and all I had was my MAGA wife and my MAGA kids, I'd still say thank God for Donald Trump. Oh, Jesus. Stupid. It hurts as us. But, you know, those are the same people who probably believe that he has. Because, you know, if you wander around social media, you'll see it. You'll see the little maggots blithering away about greatest economy MAGA America's ever MAGA had, MAGA economy, MAGA, MAGA. They're like some sort of character from Star Trek: The Next Generation. Where the Enterprise finds some strange world that's sort of wobbling around its own star and the planet doesn't work very well, and it's all poisoned and filthy, and the brains of the inhabitants there are deeply, severely impacted to the point that they have nothing left but, you know, sort of lizard-like humps at the base of their head stalks. It's not like Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra, where they speak in metaphor. The language on planet Maga consists of only one word: Maga. Maga, Maga. 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 I would not be surprised if something like that showed up maybe in one of the plot lines of the second season of The Orville. They already had an episode in the first season where people were judged based on social media likes and dislikes, thumbs up and thumbs down. And you could wind up getting a lobotomy for being unforgivably downvoted. But he said that in front of the United Nations. More than any president in our nation's history, MAGA. But it's what happened after that that really matters. We'll do a little reset.
Has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. America's so true. Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay.
Yeah. They laughed at the Maggot King. In that polite United Nations sort of ho-ho-ho way, they laughed at him. Because no one in that room believed a word that he said. They've had a chance to watch him since January the 20th of 2017 now, and they recognize that he is the biggest buffoon that this country has ever accidentally catapulted into the presidency. That's where we are, America. On the 25th day of September 2018, we are literally the laughing stock of the world. And we can sort of go, well, you know, that's. But me, the minute I saw that, I thought, oh fuck, he'll nuke Bolivia now. Somebody's going to pay for that. It may be Rod Rosenstein on Thursday or something. I don't know. But somebody's going to pay for that. I don't know. Maybe he'll go to some country and kidnap their children. But the United States of America is officially a worldwide laughingstock, thanks to Donald Trump. Anyway, as Ron in Raleigh wrote in his email titled "Shecky Trump at the UN," I just love that. Take my wife. Take my wife, please. No, really. It's terrible. She won't quit. She won't shut up about Stormy. And I can't take it much. That's why I've got my own bedroom with a lock on the door now. No, I didn't knock her out. She didn't knock me out. I knocked her out first.
I'm sure you heard the entire world laugh at the doofus-in-chief during his speech today. I'm sure he didn't realize they were laughing at him. Trump went on to talk about the globalists, which I'm sure he doesn't know the meaning of. This dog-whistling speech was obviously written by his goose-stepping advisor Obergruppenfuhrer Stephen Miller. How can a man with business interests all over the planet talk about how he's against the globalists? He doesn't know this alt-right... I'm sure he'll defund the UN when he figures out they were laughing at him. Ron putting out a P.S. Where in the world is Sandra, the entire Trump regime, with none of her trenchant observations? I don't know. Well, I'll have to see what Sandra's up to and see if she's... But I suspect Sandra is like a lot of us. There's a certain stunned incomprehensibility to it all. They're already trying to defund the UN. Jesus, this is twice in 2 days. Yesterday it was Cocoa.
I'm cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Cuckoo.
He is. Going to eradicate the Colombian cocoa problem. Got too much cocoa in Colombia. Yeah. We are hung like Jesus is already with the program. Oh God, Bob, please talk about the world literally laughing at Trump today. Can you believe that fuck? Who the hell's telling him this shit? Well, that would be Obergruppenfuhrer Stephen Miller. You know Putin is sitting back in complete fucking awe of all that he's accomplished. Romper Room did more for America than Trump. God knows Mr. Rogers did. You know, just a couple of episodes of Mr. Rogers might have made the difference in the world. Yeah, granted, you know, Trump would have been like 25, 30 when he was watching it, but it's never too late for a child to learn to be a decent human being. But I guess maybe I don't know. Maybe Fred had him watching live from the Clavern or something back then. Jesus, jumping Christ. We got laughed at by the world. The single most powerful nation the planet has ever seen. And in the space of time that extended from January 20th, 2017 to September the 25th, 2018, we're a laughingstock. We're a laughingstock. We're a joke. We're a bad joke. We're a violent joke. We're a bloody joke. We're a joke. We're a punchline. Nobody believes him. Nobody trusts him. We're a goddamn joke. Grim about it, but we're a joke. And how awful is it when dictatorial religious maniac leader of Iran responds and refers to Donald Trump's Nazi disposition? That's a quote. By the way, he got there late today. The entirety of the speech was just an attack on the global community writ large. But then... And again, once again, I think they had him dosed to the gills because he was slow, almost what would pass for him quiet. He said, Iran's leaders sow chaos, death, and destruction. Not good. Not good. And a few hours later, it was Hassan Rouhani's turn. And he addressed the assembly. Now, I'm not making any value judgments on Hassan Rouhani, but he addressed the assembly, UN General Assembly, as you would expect the leader of a country would. And because among other things, Julius Geyser had inveighed against global trade agreements and the like. And Hassan Rouhani said that Trump's distaste for those agreements were, in fact, a symptom of weakness of intellect. A symptom of weakness of intellect. And went on to say that, he decried what he referred to as a Nazi disposition of might makes right. And you know what's awful about this? The fact that Trump is a fucking Nazi. No, this is not the invective of bygone yesterdays, where somebody brings Alan Dershowitz a cold cup of coffee and you fucking Nazi. No. This is Nazi used in its historical context. This is Nazism as a movement that was led by a madman of some charisma who whipped his nation into a murderous, bellicose frenzy. And, of course, it was a little more than a year ago that Donald Trump couldn't quite bring himself to condemn real Nazis who did real violence in Charlottesville, Virginia, and then complained to his inner circle that it was a terrible decision. They made me do it. I didn't want to do it. There were very fine Nazis there that day. How pathetic. This is what happens when your country has become a laughingstock. Well, I understand, but it was a different kind of laughter. Brother Deacon Asa says, I hate to break it to you, Bob, but we were laughing back when your elected official was trying to figure out how to put food on their families. I know. And talking about the humans and fish living together in peace. I know. And asking questions like, is our children learning? I know. But George W. Bush looks like a goddamn genius compared to this guy. A malevolent genius, but, you get the idea. Steve in New York says, subject line, laughing at Trump. The thing is, the maggots love that shit. To them, it demonstrates he is pissing off the world because Merca. And the world is just jealous. Yeah, it's a sort of a burn baby burn electorate. They just like watching things be torn to pieces. Scott in San Diego says, I was going to mention JFK. I'm old enough to remember those scary 13 days in October 1962 when JFK stood up to Khrushchev over the Soviet Union's installation of nukes in Cuba. Enough, by the way, to pretty much wipe out all of the East Coast, if not escalate into a final conflict that would have handed the planet over to the cockroaches. Oh, and by stood up to, I mean he used diplomacy and smart back-channel communications to give Khrushchev no other viable alternative than to blink. So Trump can just shut the hell up and sit the hell down and leave tales of stellar history-making presidential accomplishments to those who actually know what the fluorescent fuck they're talking about. Robert in Australia. Subject line, Trump saving the world. You understand that the photo has started something that will result in the giant cockroaches that inherit this planet thinking that this orange monkey must have been the greatest hero ever. And Robert includes another photoshopped picture of Donald Trump with a pair of babies in his arms running through shallow water with apparently a host of spear-carrying warriors hot on his heels. Is that from one of the Indiana Jones movies, Robert? I don't know. Steve in New York, Trump, greatest ever. He did more than double the number of immigrant children in concentration camps. Yeah, he's got that going for him. But goddamn, when in the war of rhetorical words, the supreme leader of Iran can accuse the president of being a Nazi, and we as Americans are left to kind of go, well, he's got a point. Fuck! Ah! I remarked last night that you know, much more of this Republican gropey, rapey filth, and I'm going to have to just install a bleach shower here in the studio with a chain that hangs, and every now and then just pull the chain and you know, shower in bleach during the program. And I'm probably going to, you know, much more of this, and I'm probably going to have to start wearing a fucking helmet just for all the times that I want to bang my head off the desk. I know there's nothing to be done about it. I'm sorry. This is venting, I guess. But damn! There's nothing we can do. We're stuck with this. I guess we take the ride for the entertainment value at this point. Rouhani went on and said, no state and nation can be brought to the negotiation table by force. And if so, what follows is the accumulation of the grapes of wrath to be reaped later by the oppressors. And then he acted like a statesman. He said, we're starting the dialogue right here. We invite you to come back to the negotiating table. You left. We invite you to remain in international institutions. No war, no sanctions, no threats, no bullies. And somehow or another, a man who has little to recommend him on the world stage, a man who heads up an honest-to-God, no kidding, vicious, backward theocracy, when compared to Donald Trump, looks like a goddamn statesman, and it pisses me off. Because I love my country. And one of the requirements of loving one's country is to love one's country despite and in spite of and with full recognition of its flaws. And we have a lot of them. We've been flicking out our flaws from the very beginning, like trying to sort little pieces of rock out of a bowl of grape nuts. It ain't easy, and it's hard to tell what's grape nut and what's rock. But we are in a state of disgrace. He has disgraced this country, and I'm old enough now that I wonder if I will live to see the restoration of anything vaguely resembling a decent reputation for my country, our country. And I wouldn't necessarily put a $5 bill on it. We kidnap children and put them in concentration camps. Once upon a time, that would have been something we would have used in an argument for going to war against another nation. We try to ban an entire group of religious adherents from entering the United States when once upon a time that would have been the kind of thing that we accused a country of doing that we felt like was worthy of having our bombs fall on them. Ron in Raleigh says, I vote yes. Let's hear it for the mullah. Stronger sanctions against the country following the rules, getting cozy with North Korea when Kim Jong-un is playing his dumb ass. The Iran sanctions are going to start affecting global banking. It's getting too fucked up by half. Watching Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives, they went to a diner in Lee Sage, West Virginia. Do you know the place? I know the place. I know of the place. I don't know that I've been there. Alexander says, yes, we are a pitiful, disgraceful country. We are the most pitiful of the pitiful. We are stupid, not by accident. We are ignorant, not by happenstance. This is all by choice. It's by the choice of the people who went out and voted for Julius Geezer, and by the choice of the people who said, well, you know, it's like the lotus blossom only grows out of the mud. You know, Trump will bring the apocalypse. By choice. And, you know, you've got to come to a conclusion in your own mind as to how much of a chicken shit Trump is and how much control those so-called adults in the room from the New York Times op-ed exercise over the White House. They seem to be concerned primarily with foreign affairs and not so much domestic. And you have to worry about whether or not this man would like to get his war on with, say, Iran, or closer to home, and thereby perhaps a little bit less expensive, Venezuela. Because there was a lot of Venezuela today, too. There was, you could say, a Venezuelan undercurrent. And I can think of a lot of places that I don't want American service personnel going and dying. And Venezuela is one of them. But you get a sense that he really would like to because of all the... And socialism, MAGA, socialism, MAGA, MAGA, socialism. Yeah. Meanwhile, back here in America, the land of the free, you know, that. It was kind of a special day up in Wisconsin. I mean, I don't much care for religion, but those are watermark days for some families. The ICE thugs went ripping through 14 counties in Wisconsin and Eric Gamboa Che was, alongside with the rest of his family, preparing to see them baptized. Well, the ICE monsters showed up and arrested Eric Gamboa Che. They also arrested 33 other people, thereabouts. They banged on the door in his home in Milwaukee. They claim to be the police, which they aren't. And they arrested Eric Gamboa Che for driving without a license. And he has since been taken to some concentration camp facility run by ICE and denied bond. Eric Gamboa Che's three children are ages 8, 4, and 1. As the ICE stormtroopers carried their daddy away, they hid in the attic of their home and cried. They're now with some member of their extended family. Giselle Vera is Eric Gamboa Che's niece. She said, "Now my uncle's kids keep asking when their dad's going to come back. His youngest son has sickle cell anemia and requires constant care. His wife cannot work outside the home because she cares for him and the other two children. This is devastating to his kids and to our family. The middle son is like, when's he going to come back? When are they going to bring him back? And how do you answer that question when we don't even know what's going to happen?" No, it wasn't the Che family that was getting ready for the baptism. That was a different family that was shattered by the ICE stormtroopers. That was in Green Bay. The thugs took away six people. one being a father of eight, another being a father preparing, yes, for his children's baptism. Near Madison, Wisconsin, Jesus Enciso was snapped up by ICE. Angela Betancourt, who's been married to Jesus Enciso for 29 years, said, on Friday morning, my husband was driving to work with our son and four co-workers. My son was driving because he has a license. Agents in two cars pulled them over, made everyone get out, and asked for all their documents. They took away the five men, including my husband. I don't know why ICE would detain him. He's a hard worker. He provides for our family. We've not been able to communicate with him. We're very sad, and we need him here with us. Meanwhile, I don't know if you saw this, but a potential new rule has been published in which the Trump regime hopes to deny green cards to legal immigrants who may at one time or another have availed themselves of SNAP, you know, food benefits, temporary assistance to needy families, or Medicaid. Legal immigrants are allowed to access all of these things. But not according to these misbegotten, misanthropic, vicious, hate-filled, fascist punks from the Trump regime. Yeah, Merca. According to Madison, Wisconsin radio station WKOW, at least one local business closed yesterday because employees didn't show up. That would be the Tipsy Cow restaurant in Madison. They put a message on their door that said, Tipsy Cow will be closed due to the current pressure on the Latino community. We will reopen as soon as we can. The Madison Metropolitan School District has felt compelled to send out a letter of support to parents, telling them that their children are safe at school, but saying that they understand parental concerns if the parents want to keep their children at home. Rachel Strouch Nelson wrote in the letter, "We will always work to ensure our schools are safe, but we also want families to know that we support you in your decision-making to keep you and your family safe. Parents can call their school office to excuse their child from school if needed." Let that sink in. Imagine being a parent afraid to send your child to school because the government of the United States might come to the school and kidnap your children and put them in a concentration camp. Robert in Australia says, it's beginning to feel a little bit like North Korea. It occurred to me after sending my last email that the USA is beginning to feel a little bit like North Korea, with photoshopped images of the great leader personally saving people, babies, dogs, and cats, while leaping over the Empire State Building in a single bound. It won't be long before images of Donald Trump descending the ladder of Apollo 11 appear. You know what I wish, Robert? I wish you hadn't said that. Because at this point in time, I'm almost certain that it already exists. Flavio, who's up in Wisconsin, said, had the U.S. not conspired and succeeded in overthrowing the democratically elected government of Dr. Mohammad Mossadegh in 1954 and imposed a dictatorship on Iran that lasted from 1954 to 1979, 25 years of a sadistic, ruthless dictatorship, maybe they wouldn't have a fundamentalist theocracy today. And maybe, just maybe, we might not be running the risk of being under one ourselves very soon. By the way, quick fact check note, Brother Deacon Asa lets us know. Just to clarify, Rouhani is not the so-called supreme leader of Iran. He's an elected president. The supreme leader is a nasty number elected by a way of an assembly of religious fuckwads sitting around all night and sending smoke signals. There's a real ideological struggle inside of Iran whereby moderates like Rouhani and his crew are having their lives threatened by the fundy scumbag followers of the Ayatollah. You know, much like Mirka. Too much like Mirka. I understand, Alexander. Alexander says, that fucker and his many minions are going to rot in hell soon enough. Please believe it. They will not be spending eternity with God. He's very upset with these people and their clearly demonic activities. Yeah, I would just as soon see us take care of business here and get him out of office before he can, you know, nuke the world. Ron in Raleigh says, just before listening to you, I was listening to the Devil's Advocates. They were interviewing a Republican state representative. He explained that ICE only arrests people that have criminal records. These bastards lie with such ease. And they do. And they do. And that's pretty much the filibobster. But I'd like to... Well, I admit it. I've done everything I could to stay out of the filth, i.e. the Kavanaugh nomination. But sooner or later, we have to go there. Ah, a note from Terry in Saigon. Those of us who are living outside the borders of our country have become accustomed to being laughed at for some time now. Even members of the resistance are lumped in with Trumpansies. And I don't know how you differentiate, but I'm not,
quit telling us how to be expats, Bob.
You know, get a T-shirt with Trump's face on it and in whatever language, wherever you are, worst president ever, you know? Or I despise him too. Anything to set yourself apart from the madding crowd of maggots. So anyway, earlier today, Dr. Robert Jeffress, he's one of those doctors, who is the gospel sharp in charge of a massive hustle in Dallas, the First Baptist Church of Dallas, jumped on Twitter to try to get his nose up twixt Donnie's orange cheeks real good, get into the sweet brown quick as he could. And he said, President Donald Trump just delivered the, and he added Donald Trump so Trump would see it. President at real Donald Trump just delivered the strongest speech to the United Nations of any president in history, Democrat or Republican. His bold and courageous address is another reminder of why he was elected president and others weren't. Hashtag UNGA, UN General Assembly. What a pig. Any president any. Yeah, Brown knows much. Bob Jeffers. Yeah, I know. Flavio with a note says, protocol? What protocol? In regard to the massive raids across Wisconsin. The raids were in direct violation of a protocol agreement reached just a week ago between local law enforcement agencies and Immigration and Customs Enforcement officials, Madison Mayor Paul Soglin said at the news conference. Protocol? We don't need no stinking protocol. Yeah, I know. Marty says of Jeffress, what a suck-up. Meanwhile, Jeff from Hellhole, Indiana says, I'll take Herbert Hoover for 50 cents, Alex. Kevin in Colorado Springs says, and also by choice of those voters who voted their conscience for Jill Stein instead of voting for the good of the country for Hillary Clinton. Well, that's what I was talking about when I was talking about the lotuses that rise out of the mud and the Apocryph and all that, because that was a bunch of silly horse shit uttered by, Susan Sarandon. But ICE is not slowing down. What I described in Wisconsin, what does an ICE stormtrooper care about a one-year-old with sickle cell anemia who needs constant care? Not a damn thing. Early last month, in Nebraska and Minnesota, ICE ran massive workplace raids, capturing 130 undocumented immigrants. One of the raids took place in O'Neill, Nebraska. There's just a little over 3,000 people in O'Neill, Nebraska. And the superintendent of the O'Neill Public School, Amy Shane, interviewed by the Washington Post, said she thinks anywhere between 50 to 100 children in her school district may have been separated from a relative or immediate family member as a result. Yeah. Jesus. Then it's Texas, 159 undocumented workers. Back in June, 114 in Ohio. Meatpacking plant in Tennessee on April 5th, 94 people. Nazi-like, said Iranian President Rouhani. Nazi-like. Hard to argue with him, isn't it? Especially with that little turd on two legs, Stephen Miller, running, running his little racist exercises. So it's about 10 minutes past the hour. Sooner or later, we're going to have to deal with the Kavanaugh sleaze some more. And I guess we'll do that. It's Tuesday, though. That means we mercifully have the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen, and we'll get into the seedy, skeevy, filth that is the world of Brett Kavanaugh after that. If you've got something on your mind, if you want to discuss this issue, I welcome you so to do. I'm not going to sit here and drop a 2.5-hour filibobster on you if you've got something you want to say. Easy enough to get into the program. I mean, do you want to just sort of add your voice to a public declaration that this is not being done in your name, that you want nothing to do with it? Well, you can do that here. Feel free to do so. You know how to reach the program, area code 304-574-8178. Or the stress line, named for Bill, Mr. Stress Miller, our dear friend, gone but not forgotten. 304-640-2829. If you need us to pay the freight on the phone call, you can get in that way. Toll free, it's from anywhere in Canada, Mexico, or the United States. 844-843-4676. And I screwed that up too. Let's make that clear. 844-843-4676 gets you in toll free from anywhere in Canada, the United States, or Mexico, and from anywhere on the planet, Skype to Skype. Also, no charge. Bob Kincaid Horn, B-O-B. K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. That having been said, there is Kavanaugh stuff to go into. And you are mighty welcome to participate. Let's check out the Green News Report and then come back and see what's on everybody's minds. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. We'll be back.
It's Tuesday, September 25, 2018.
Even if the Waccamaw River crests on Tuesday, as predicted, the floodwaters may not recede for days, even weeks.
Nope, the impacts from Hurricane Florence ain't over yet. And yep, new evacuations are underway in South Carolina. As predicted, Florence flooding spills toxic coal ash waste. National TV media failed to connect the dots between the storm's impact and climate change.
As predicted.
Plus,
the Republicans are really, really nervous about an 8-member court delivering some liberal victories.
Endangered species hang in the balance as Republicans rush their nominee onto the Supreme Court.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Thousands of dead fish have been left along I-40 in the aftermath of Hurricane Florence.
Huh. Wonder what's holding up the plague of locusts. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we're now about a week and a half past landfall of Florence, and still new evacuations going on in the Carolinas?
Yep, rivers are continuing to crest in South Carolina now, with authorities in Georgetown County urging thousands of residents to prepare to evacuate ahead of historic flooding that could last for weeks. And to add insult to injury, Florence's receding floodwaters have left behind thousands of rotting dead fish, creating an awful stench on Interstate 40 in North Carolina. Also in North Carolina, as predicted, a coal ash waste dump owned by Duke Energy was breached by floodwaters and spilled into the Cape Fear River. Duke Energy says its initial testing conducted by its in-house lab indicate that the discharge into the Cape Fear River, quote, shows a slight increase in contamination, but well below permitted regulatory limits, with little to no impact on river water quality.
Well, if Duke Energy's own internal study says everything's fine, why worry? worry.
But North Carolina environmental groups recorded gray sludge on the riverbanks and in the water and say they're awaiting results of independent testing.
Moreover, heavy metals, toxins, mercury, arsenic, all kinds of things were found in the Cape Fear River downstream from this coal ash pit. The parts per million were some three times higher than the water tested upstream of the coal ash pit.
In July, the Trump administration rolled back Obama-era coal ash waste rules that would have limited the risk of these predictable spills. Although scientists say that climate change intensified Florence's effects, national TV news outlets failed to incorporate that into their hurricane coverage. According to a Media Matters analysis, ABC News did not mention climate at all during its Florence coverage. CBS, PBS, CNN, and MSNBC did at times connect Florence's extremes with climate change, but did so less than they did during their coverage of Hurricane Harvey last year.
I have no idea what it's going to take at this point.
Meanwhile, in Washington, the Trump administration Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration on Monday rolled back Obama-era safety rules designed to prevent explosions of trains that haul oil. The rules would have required trains carrying oil and other flammable materials to install special brakes and other safety features, but the administration said a new analysis found the cost of the rule to the industry outweighed the benefits.
Making America great again. Making oil trains explode again.
Republicans are desperately trying to ram through confirmation of D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals Judge Brett Kavanaugh, Donald Trump's scandal-plagued anti-environment nominee to the U.S. Supreme Court, before voters have their say in the crucial November midterm elections. But at stake is more than just control of Congress. As Slate's legal reporter Mark Joseph Stern explained on a recent broadcast, the court is currently divided 4-4, and in a new session that begins on October 1st is a new case that is very important to the logging, mining, and drilling industries.
There's one case that the conservatives plainly want to use to sort of hobble the Environmental Protection Agency by interpreting the Endangered Species Act in a really cramped and limited way. And I think the Republican Party wants their fifth man on the bench to cast the tie-breaking vote and deliver conservative victories in all of those cases.
Some good news, a federal appeals court has ordered the Environmental Protection Agency to immediately enforce an Obama-era chemical plant safety rule that the Trump administration had tried to delay. The risk management program rule was put in place by the Obama administration after the deadly West Texas fertilizer explosion in 2013.
Man, we are so lucky that the courts are, at least for now, still holding the line.
And finally, Cleveland, Ohio has become the latest major city in the United States to commit to 100% renewable electricity by 2050. They join more than 80 U.S. cities that have committed to get all of their electricity from renewable sources. In Ohio, that might be easier said than done, but it's a start.
For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us worldwide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Eighteen past the hour, and let's run over to the stress line. I suspect, I'm not entirely certain, but I suspect that Kevin from Colorado Springs is with us. Is that you, Kevin?
Yes, it is.
How are you?
I had to call on the stress line just in honor of Bill Miller. Gone but not forgotten by any means. So that's why I called on the stress line, because it's just a little way of remembering Mr. Bill. You know, you said something a couple of weeks ago about, it's, in a way, it's probably better that Bill is not here. And I could only imagine what he would be saying. You know, he was a kid in World War II, very young kid. And I keep thinking of that Al Stewart song, Laughing in the 1939, just 80 years ago. Approximately, and instead of Germany, this time it's America. And America has not learned a thing from history, from what the Germans did. And instead of the Jews this time, it's any foreigner. Foreigner being anyone that's not white, male American, in most cases. It just, I'm amazed at, I'm amazed that we're here at this point in history. I just can't believe it, you know. I mean, I obviously do believe it because I'm living in it, but when I stop and think about where we were just 10 years ago with the election of Barack Obama, and we're here now in late 2018 going into 2019, I just can't believe it, Bob. I really can't. I don't even, you know, look, I don't know that anybody can say anything to explain it, because I sure is. I know the causes. I can go down a whole list of them, but I still can't believe it. I just can't. You know, it's like living a bad dream.
I know, but the problem, Kevin, is what do you do in response? I mean, that's where I run up against, you know, the trees, the telephone poles, and the brick walls.
And that's, I can't answer that because I posed that question. You posed the question.
I mean, the closest thing I've got to an answer here is what we do here, and that is to just sort of form and revel in community and talk amongst ourselves and hang out on the ledge and flick cigarette butts at the MAGA ball caps 50 stories below.
Yep. I don't know. It aside from what we do here now, what do we do in our neighborhoods and our communities? And the response, for that matter, in our communities, neighborhoods, and states, because this is a war by the Republicans that is multi-fronts to it. It's not just immigrants. It's not just this, that, or the other. It's everything that, as far as I'm concerned anyway, that not only I as a so-called liberal hold dear, it's what we consider to be not liberal values, American values, freedom of speech, freedom of religion. And, you know, all the other freedoms that supposedly go along with that. You know, just like you talked about the Wisconsin, they had that agreement, a protocol, and those protocols were ignored by ICE. You know, and I can imagine being someone. You don't even have to be a so-called illegal immigrant. I have someone that comes in to help me that told me a story that I didn't know about at the time. They had gone to get something for me at a store, and they're of Hispanic descent. And someone came up to her and started yelling at her about, "What are you doing here in America? Get out of my America," blah, 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 you know. And this person is an American. They're Puerto Rican.
Well, let's take a moment since you bring up an incident like that, Kevin. Let's go to Charlotte, North Carolina. Charlotte, North Carolina, where that weird, desperate, attention-hungry little wingnut was so put off by a Jason Isbell song. Apparently there's more like her there. According to reporting from WJZY, a staffer at the YMCA called the cops on a woman over her swimsuit.
Now, hold on. Hold on. This is a prudish, puritanical nation. And, you know, you can see somebody getting called for, like, you know, because it's the YMCA and there's kids around and everything. And you could see somebody getting the cops called on them for, you know, or at least some to ask her to, you know, wrap a towel around, you know. And because we are prudish and puritanical, and I'm not saying I endorse such action, but, you know, let's say, you know, a little itty-bitty, tiny little thong bikini with, you know, that doesn't have, you know, 0.75 ounces of actual fabric in it. Right, I mean, you know, what about the cheerings, right? I mean, we kind of expect that. Are you with me? Well, no, this was a Muslim woman who was wearing a full body swimsuit. She said, what am I doing that's wrong? Watching my daughters? At my age, I'm not going to strip naked. And in the video, the Charlotte Mecklenburg Police Department officer says, under the YMCA policy, you do not have proper swim attire. You got too much clothes on to be a swimming pool lady. What are you, some sort of ninja Muslim terrorist? Okay, and I didn't say that. Here, let's go to the audio, shall we?
Yep. Go ahead.
We'll have to get through the goddamned ad first, but then we'll go to, yeah.
That's America. You got to wait for the ad to get done.
Brian, I spoke with the YMCA management tonight on the phone, and they say they are very upset about what happened here this weekend. As you mentioned, they said it's a misunderstanding, and it actually goes against their values as a Christian organization.
Come on, man. You can tell me what am I doing that's wrong, watching my daughters. At my age, I'm not going to strip naked.
A confrontation, including a CMPD officer at the Harris YMCA pool over swimwear.
Basically, under the YMCA's policy, you do not have proper swim attire on.
I could have been given a warning or something, but not to the point of calling the police and waiting for me right there.
Fatima Najati is the woman you heard in that video. She took her 8-year-old and 2-year-old daughter to swim on Sunday. That's where the problem started. Charlotte YMCA pool rules say a child under the age of 9 must be in the pool with an adult.
It's not swim attire.
It is swim attire.
The lifeguard wouldn't let Fatima get in because they thought she was fully clothed. But this is what she was wearing. Being Muslim, Fatima says it's as close as she can get to a standard swimsuit.
Of course, I make sure that I pick swimwear material, clothes. So nobody has ever bothered me except for that day.
YMCA management called Fatima Monday to apologize, saying the confrontation was a misunderstanding. They also sent this statement, which reads, the YMCA of Greater Charlotte is committed to providing a welcoming environment for all people. We deeply regret our error, and we are grateful for her acceptance of our apology and her willingness to work with us to help our staff fully understand, respect, and appreciate the many cultures, religions, and experiences of our members.
How about that, Kevin?
Yeah. Because we're a democracy, you know, America, respect and tolerance for all religions and cultures, and
but you know the funny thing is I don't know who the pool patty was in this particular instance. But if you go, because when I first saw the story, I went over and checked out swimwear.
Yep.
And there are, there have been big leaps forward in swimwear. And there are swimsuits that, among other things, for women who surf, they're called rash guards. And they fit skin tight. And their purpose is to keep you from getting beat up in the surf or, you know, beat up by your board. I don't know. I don't think it'll stop you from being eaten by sharks or anything. But it comes all the way down to the wrist. It goes all the way down to the ankles and covers up all the way up to the neck. And I think there's even some Muslim swimwear out there that includes, you know, covering for the woman's head so God won't be offended by her demon-inspired hair. I mean, look, I find all of that religious nonsense just unimaginably, incomprehensibly stupid. But that's me, not her. And if she's, you know, if she wants to be at the pool, and because of the dictates of her religion, has to be covered from below her ankles up to her chin. Well, you know, that's what her God requires of her. And welcome to America. But not according to Pool Patty there.
Nope.
She's trying to get into the she's trying to get into the pool with the with her clothes on. Why you got no thong? God almighty.
I just love the cop there too.
Right, because you know the cop is well versed in the swimming pool regulations.
Right, yeah. And nothing will be done by the Charlotte-Mecklenburg police about him. I don't know if you noticed I got to bring this up. The Dallas police officer that shot the black man in his own apartment.
Yeah, Botham Jean. Yeah, she's been fired because of how she responded when she was being questioned. Not because she shot a guy in his own home, but because she breached some sort of internal administrative protocol.
Right. That's what just blew my mind, is not because she didn't follow even basic proper police procedure. You just got off duty. Most police officers I know bring their equipment home with them. And so if she couldn't open that door like she says happened, she should have just got on the radio and called for backup without going into that apartment one-on-one, not knowing what was behind the door, which I'm sure she did. But that's her story. So if we even go with her story, she didn't follow the police pursuit, but she wasn't fired for that or even for shooting the guy. She was fired because of how she responded to questioning and the fact she was arrested finally, but that wouldn't have even happened had not there been an outcry raised about it. And, you know, that. Just like that person that called, whoever that person was there in Charlotte, these people want you to, you know, no different than any other fascist government anywhere, any time in history. Keep your head down, shut up, don't make yourself noticed. That's what they want. They rule by fear, they live by fear. And that's what's the most scary thing to me, because their objective with this Muslim woman at their pool is to kill this Muslim American woman. You're not wanted, just like the person that came up to the friend of mine that was at the store getting something for me. You're not welcome in, quote unquote, our America. And, again, I'm at a loss as to how to respond other than to stand up when and where I can for what's right, however I can do it. But I know I'm a minority by virtue of my disability. I keep hearing reports about Trump wanting to slash Social Security. And that's been a goal of the Republicans for years. I don't doubt that sooner or later it's going to happen. And that's again, you know, all these things, even the Endangered Species Act that'll come up for a vote or come up for a hearing with the Supreme Court, just like Brad and Desi were talking about. Yeah, and sooner or later, we're not going to be free at all.
Yeah.
And
I should let you know that the Senate Judiciary Committee, they say there's going to be a hearing on Thursday, and they're bringing in their hired female gun, because all of those big bold men, those big bold strong masculine white old Republican men, are scared to death to ask questions of a woman. And so they're bringing in some soulless creep to do their dirty work for them, thinking that if a woman asks them, that somehow it won't seem quite so viciously misogynistic. And by the way, they absolutely will not have anything to do with Deborah Ramirez.
Yep.
They won't interview her. They won't let her testify. They don't want to. And then they're scheduling a committee vote. Now, this is not the main vote. They've scheduled their committee vote on Kavanaugh for the following Friday, this Friday, the 28th of September. And then they plan to work through the weekend so that they can vote on Kavanaugh next week and have him on the Supreme Court in time for, if not the exact opening of the Supreme Court's term, a couple of days in. Yep. Because they are willing to burn everything down for this, and it makes you wonder why.
Yep. Well, it's just, and it, you know, they keep saying there's nothing to these reports by either of the women. It's more than either of the women. It's many women at this point, I've heard. But they keep saying there's nothing to these reports by these women. It was so long ago. So why should they be so scared to do an FBI investigation? They want nothing to do with an FBI investigation into any of this, because they know what will come out. That's my belief. I think there's a whole lot hiding under the surface there besides these women's accusations if an FBI investigation happened. And
all of his blithering, all of Kavanaugh's blithering to Martha McCallum, the sexual abuse apologist who did everything in her power to protect Roger Ailes at Fox, all of his blithering about, you know, I was a virgin, Sergeant Carter. Apparently that didn't, no. He had a roommate in a dorm his freshman year in Yale. And his roommate was a guy named Steve Kantrowitz, Kevin. And Steve Kantrowitz is a well-regarded published history professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison now. And you don't get hired there because you got your history degree from the Draw Spunky School of History matchbook program. And so Steve Kantrowitz said, perhaps Brett Kavanaugh was a virgin for many years after high school, but he claimed otherwise in a conversation with me during our freshman year in Lawrence Hall at Yale in the living room of my suite. So he lied about that, too. We don't know if he was lying last night or if he was lying when he was a freshman at Yale. All we know is that he's a liar.
Right.
And a drunk. He's not. I don't think he's an alcoholic because alcoholics go to meetings. He's just an unrepentant, unrecovered drunk.
Right.
So there's that from Kantrowitz, and then there's the further statement from by another roommate named James Roche. KGO-TV in San Francisco interviewed him, and he said he shared an apartment with Brett Kavanaugh in the fall of 1983 at Yale. He said the following. We shared a two-bedroom unit in the basement of Lawrence Hall on the old campus. Despite our living conditions, Brett and I did not socialize beyond the first few days of freshman year. We talked at night as freshman roommates do, and I would see him as he returned from nights out with his friends. It is from this experience that I concluded that although Brett was normally reserved, he was a notably heavy drinker, even by the standards of the time, and that he became aggressive and belligerent when he was very drunk. I did not observe the specific incident in question, but I do remember Brett frequently drinking excessively and becoming incoherently drunk. But the Senate Judiciary Committee doesn't want to hear that.
Nope.
Or at least the Republicans on the Senate Judiciary Committee don't want to hear that. Because that would raise like a fifth or maybe a sixth perjury problem for Brett Kavanaugh.
Well, Republicans in general do not want to hear anything that doesn't agree with what they believe. They cannot even consider that someone might just possibly be right about something.
Well, they don't want to, but Kevin, I think it's a little even simpler than that. They don't want to hear anything that conflicts at all with their naked grab for the exercise of raw political power.
Yep. And they are willing to do anything to get it. That's, you know, I mean, we all know this. We all know what most Republicans are about. You know, why cheat, steal, ignore evidence of criminal behavior by from the president on down to his nominees. You know, we'll all ignore all that to get our way, to get their way, I should say, and, you know, sell out the country. And that's, you know, there's nothing different. I mean, if the, you got to look at the leader of the party right now, which is Donald Trump. And if Donald Trump's the leader of the party, doesn't that tell you a lot about the party itself? You know?
Yeah.
So,
but I'm also cognizant, Kevin, that all of this is not strictly a matter of Donald Trump. It is without a doubt Donald Trump's party. But this is a problem that has existed within the filthy male power structure of the Republican Party for generations. And look, let's be fair, exists within the culture writ large.
You're right.
And these are somewhat desperate halting steps toward making that better, toward trying to be a better country. But of course, Julius Geezer, the Chlamydia Claudius, has decided to sleaze Deborah Ramirez. It's heartrending, but it's also true. He broke his silence and said that. I'm looking for it here.
Might take me a minute.
That's okay. I heard it earlier today. And yeah,
well, basically said it's her fault because she was drunk.
Yep. Well, that again. You know, today or yesterday, I forget which. I think it was today was the anniversary of the black children trying to go to school in Alabama. Was that today or yesterday?
No, I don't, but...
You know what I'm talking about, where they had to hand out, okay.
The schoolhouse door.
Right. What's so different about that then and today? There's not much different about it. Those were children of color trying to go to school like everybody else. They were Americans. And fast forward 50-plus years to today, and when you think about it, we really haven't progressed that much as a nation. You know, we made some progress. We threw it all away very quickly. And, you know, what you were saying at the beginning of the program, I was just nodding my head in agreement. I don't know. I have no answers. I really don't. Other than, like I said, you know, try to stand up for what's right and do what's right when and where I can, because that's all I can do. I'm only, you know, for me, I'm only one person, but you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah, I do.
One person, but I sometimes, you know, I just cannot believe that a good portion of America has fallen for this BS. That's what I'm really having trouble with, because they, like I said, they rule by fear, they live by fear, and they use fear. That's how they got Donald Trump elected in the first place. Fear and religion. I should add religion into that.
Well, and I think it plays its role. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Here it is. Here's the quote from Trump. This second accuser has nothing. She admits that she was drunk. She admits time lapses. Disgusting. Disgusting. Kevin. Good to hear from you, my friend. I trust you're doing okay these days. You're getting better all the time. You're over the hump.
On the hump. I'm somewhere over the hump, on the hump, but I'm getting better. Yes, I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
Tape him in other words. So.
All right. But, well, let us talk soon, and have yourself a good evening, my friend.
Thank you, Bob. Take care.
Bye now. Our buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. Yeah, let's check the audio just real quick. Yeah, here we go.
Nobody ever knew about it. Nobody ever heard about it. And now a new charge comes up. And she said, well, it might not be him. And there were gaps. And she said she was totally inebriated. And she was all...
Lie.
Messed up, and she doesn't know it was him, but it might have been him. Oh, gee, let's not make him a Supreme Court judge because of that. This is a con game being played by the Democrats. False accusation and false accusations of all types are made against a lot of people. This is a high-quality person, and I certainly hope it would be a horrible insult to our country if this doesn't happen.
And, Mr. President.
A horrible insult to our country if this doesn't happen. Not a horrible insult to every woman in this country if it does happen. Because, hey, you know, we've already got a rapey guy on the Supreme Court. What's one more? Right? What's one more? Sure. Note coming from Darlene in Connecticut. I'm beginning to think that, like Trump, Kavanaugh is a pathological liar. Grassley has scheduled a vote on Kavanaugh for this Friday. Yes,
a body language expert looked at the interview last night and said, oh, this guy's lying through his teeth. And by the way, all that bullshit about how she doesn't really remember and the New York Times didn't really want the story. Ronan Farrow tweeted earlier today, the New York Times reiterating that they did not decline or pass on the Ramirez story as claimed by several conservative politicians, including, you know, Old Oral and Chinless Mitch. They were simply unable to secure the central interview with her or with the contemporaneous collaborators who spoke to New Yorker. In other words, well, Mitch McConnell is a liar. Yep. Oh, let's see. Let's go over and check in with Scott real quick. The stress line is now open. 844-843-4676, toll free, or 304-640-2829 if you want to get in that way. Hey, Scott.
Hey, Bob. Let me see if I can channel Franklin Delano Roosevelt. So first of all, let me assert my firm belief that the only thing we have to fear is Trump himself. Golden lettered name on everything, unreasoning, fully justified terror, which paralyzes needed efforts to convert retreat into advance. So, take our
cue. You've even kind of got the old microphone thing going on for you there, Scott.
Well, there you go.
Very well done.
Thank you. Thank you. I've got a couple of observations and a suggestion for the GOP and a question about Kavanaugh's interview the other night. But you're talking about Trump at the UN. I must tell you how frustrated I am, Bob. I cannot keep up. Trump mistakenly referred to coca, the plant used to make cocaine, as cocoa.
Correct.
How safe I now feel. Not since Reagan's great nutmeg invasion of Grenada have I felt so proud to be an American.
Oh, I got out the refills for my box cutter, and got out the good stuff. You know, the Hershey's special dark cocoa powder, and I cut out a couple of lines of that last night. And I got to tell you, it. Whew! Yeah.
And if somebody points out to Trump that it's white chocolate, he'll just say there's bad chocolate on both sides, you know?
And some of it was, I'm sure, very fine chocolate.
That's the way he rolls.
Very fine cocoa.
But here's my suggestion for the GOP. They've been around, what, since 1854?
Roughly, yeah. Log cabin, Wisconsin.
For most of that time, their symbol for the Republican Party has been the elephant. And I think it's time for them to upgrade their image and come up with a new pictogram for their logo. And I've got, courtesy of the New York Times, a perfect idea for them. Headline, highly aggressive green crabs from Canada menace Maine's coast. The crabs, which are known as the cockroaches of the sea, eat oysters, can prey on lobsters in groups, and have been known to turn on each other.
Wait a minute. Wait a minute. Are these MS-13 crabs? Are these crab gangs?
No, I don't know. They're green crabs from Canada. I didn't read the article to get their Latin name, but
I know Jill Stein can be a little crabby, but that seems, you know, green crabs.
I'm just telling you what the New York Times said, the failing New York Times. But anyway, that's to me, that's my helpful suggestion to the GOP. Make their new logo, their new mascot, the Canadian green crab. Jesus.
I thought you were going to suggest that they needed to just punt most of the elephant and just keep the southbound end of a northbound elephant doing what the southbound end of a northbound elephant does.
Yeah, which is create GOP talking points. You know, they've got that poor elephant working so hard that PETA called the GOP and insisted that they give the put the elephant on golden overtime, that golden triple overtime, and give the thing hazard duty pay. That poor elephant is just beside himself.
Well, and being PETA, they also offered to come and euthanize it for them because they enjoy that kind of thing because they're PETA.
Well, there's that. One of my far-flung relatives back east noted that Trump says he's the Hemingway of Twitter. Do you think he knows Hemingway went nuts and killed himself? So there's that. But, and my TV viewing tip. For those of you who have HBO or who've always wanted to get it, this premiered last night on HBO, the documentary Jane Fonda in Five Acts. It is a superb documentary, and I hope everybody will watch it. That woman has had quite the life, and I know a lot of people on the right don't like her, but people on the right don't like a lot of things, so fuck them.
Well, people, the white wing doesn't like anybody. I mean, it's like something that Ron in Raleigh said about the incident at the Charlotte YMCA. Have you noticed, isn't it odd that it's never a person of color that calls the police on a white person? What in the hell's wrong with some white people? Do they believe that what offends them should be illegal? Yes, they do. They have a constitutional right not to be offended. And they also have a constitutional right to live in persistent, bowel-watering fear of anything they don't understand or comprehend.
And if the people of Alabama, speaking of Alabama, as Kevin was, if the people of Alabama have anything to do with it, they want to put to a vote some kind of amendment, a publicly supported amendment, I believe it was, to revisit that Ten Commandments. I mean,
because of course they do.
Well, that thing has had more comebacks than the cast of The Night of the Living Dead. I mean, they're pod people, is what they are.
More revivals than cats.
Yeah, there you go. But anyway, none of that really.
Commandments, matters. All alone in the moonlight. Nope, sorry. Nope. No more singing.
That's all right. That's all right. You sing about it like I do. But the question that I have, actually, all that was prologue to get to this part. The question that I have is about Kavanaugh's interview Monday, I guess it was Monday, on so-called Fox so-called news. Something struck me about that thing, or a number of things struck me about that thing. First of all, that he was a virgin for so long, or claimed to be.
Like a virgin.
It's
like he's in the wrong time, like he's been transported from the 50s, to a Leave It to Beaver world into our present day and or recent decades and didn't quite know how to act. I don't believe him.
No, I mean, I'm secure in my analogy now, my comparison, that he is Spalding Brett Kavanaugh is Spalding from Caddyshack, and the Philip Seymour Hoffman character from The Scent of a Woman.
Yeah.
Just obnoxious, raised in privilege. Let's take this somewhere else. I mean, I know people who went to Yale. They're not all assholes. But I guess, so he had to have some kind of grades to get into Yale, right? I mean, or was he a legacy admit? I haven't seen that. You know, Dim Leader got into Yale because he was a legacy admit. But so he must have done some homework somewhere along the way in high school, and I, you know, whatevs. But the business with his yearbook and the business with the FFFFF 4th of July and the business with the Renata alumnus. I mean, Jesus Christ, that's slimy.
Yeah, I know. You know, well, to say that he remained a virgin, okay, let's recount. Because I even looked at his timeline to figure out some stuff.
Well, okay, but before we go there, let's acknowledge that one of these cultural things is that adolescent boys lie about their sexual prowess. And it has to do with patriarchy, and it has to do with senses of masculine insecurity, and you know what I mean.
Yeah.
He's not going to be the only one. And women have complained about this for years because, you know, the lie will be told. I mean, it's a Hollywood staple. What was her name? The actor Easy A.
I don't know.
It's exactly about this. It's a play on words or a play on letter. Because of course, in the Scarlet Letter, the adulterous woman has to wear a Scarlet A on her raiment.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's being, but the plot device in this is a twist on that, but here you've got in this case it's a young girl who figures they're going to say it about her anyway, so she might as well capitalize on it. But well, it's an old story, and to find out that Brett Kavanaugh was like, I mean. Emma Stone. There we go. Thank you, Marty. But even with that being the case, equally disturbing is his desire to try to fudge it up. And the way it was played on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, I mean, if the goddess of irony, who doesn't miss much, that she really should have possessed Martha McCallum with the zombie spirit of Roger Ailes and had that evil exorcist voice come out of Martha McCallum's mouth to ask Ashley, "You wearing panties?" Because that's Martha McCallum was a staunch defender of Roger Ailes during all the conduct that Roger Ailes engaged in. Sleazing and sliming all over the women who worked at Fox News. That would have been a great moment, you know. Unfortunately, it didn't happen, except in my imagination. But the fact of the matter is, it was so precious because he said, "I didn't have sex then, and I didn't have sex for a long time after." High school, to which, I don't know if you saw it or not, Martha McCallum, you know, piercingly looks at him and says, "You mean you were a virgin?"
All you need there is an organ sting.
Yeah,
like
right.
Old time radio.
Nah, yeah. To which he almost sort of embarrassingly goes, "Yes."
Well, typically, guys...
Oh, look, Marveline, he was a virgin when he went to Yale. Isn't that precious?
Typically, guys, especially adolescents, and even later in adolescence and into their early 20s, they brag the other way. They talk about, like you say, their prowess and stuff. what Kavanaugh is doing now is not bragging. He's scrambling to give himself as much cover as he can humanly muster, given this onslaught of accusations. And there'll be more to come. You know, there's been three shoes now which you've dropped in terms of women, if I haven't lost count.
Well, by tomorrow we're supposedly going to have the Avenatti revelations.
And what did he say? His warning was to Trump and to Kavanaugh, be very careful. Isn't that what?
Yeah, because apparently she has passed multiple background checks and has had various and sundry security clearances over the course of what he describes as a respectable, distinguished career. And that, you know, the double barrel of it is that she's a victim and a corroborator.
How what was that term that she used? A distinguished, productive, distinguished career to describe Kavanaugh? Is that how you describe it? Kavanaugh is productive and whatever the other word was, like I'm 40 years younger, 120 pounds lighter, built like a brick shithouse, and I'm an internationally known adult film star. Okay? That's how likely there's any distinguishment surrounding Kavanaugh. But the thing I want to know is, and that's why I bring this question to you and the Horn congregation, because you guys know this shit. I searched my memory bank, and I cannot recall an instance of a nominee to the Supreme Court who has sat down for an interview in the course of the confirmation process.
That's because it hasn't happened.
Well, there you go. My memory is not in error. And that should give people a pause in terms of the level of desperation on the part of Kavanaugh and the rest of these people. Conversely, it will get, where did he run to? Well, the old tried and true.
He ran to the House organ. He wasn't going to take the risk of having Anderson Cooper ask him some hard question.
Oh, hell no. Hell no.
You know, he was asking him about being a member of the 100 Keg Society, a group of Georgetown prep students who were committed to drinking 100 kegs of beer before they graduated.
Yeah, Jesus.
And he sure wasn't going to, he wasn't going to face any kind of a grilling over the tawdry, sleazy, filthy job that he and his buddies did on Renata. Right?
Well, I keep going back to, and I mentioned the timeline with the alleged virginity of one Brett Kavanaugh. All right, he was born in what, 65? He was about 14 when he entered high school. So his high school career, assuming he graduated each year or was promoted each year, would be from 14 to 18. And he didn't graduate out of, was it Yale or Harvard? Always get
Yale.
Confused.
Yale.
He didn't graduate from Yale till I think the 87 or 89. It was one of those. And he did a lot of stuff. And then he had a first date on September 10th, 2001, with the woman who is now his wife. And they didn't actually get married until, I think, 2004. So he intends for me to believe that he remained a virgin. Now, he didn't say he was a virgin on his wedding night, but I kind of took that as read. That's the only way to be if you're going to appeal to the to the religious fanatics here and abroad. Okay, so he went from, let's say, 87 until his wedding night in 2004. Well, first of all, did anybody see the sheets the following morning?
Oh, my God. Please, don't get all Sicilian on us, okay?
It's not just Sicilian, Bob. It's in a lot of cultures.
Oh, I know, but it's the Godfather.
In other words, that's just a bunch of stuff to say I don't buy it. Because I don't, I can see it in another era, okay, that... You know, girls and boys both, mostly girls, but boys especially. I mean, girls especially, and even boys, some of them, remain chaste and pure, so-called, until their betrothed happens upon them. But in today's world, are you kidding? The last 30 years or so, 35 years?
Well, yeah. But remember, by 1985... put it in context, Scott. That was back during the time when the Reagan administration was doing everything in its power to ignore the rising AIDS crisis.
Yeah.
And it was also a time when, I mean, I kind of remember 1985. I graduated college in 1985, okay? High school in 81, college in 85. And... You know, toward the end of it, we began to, you know, hear about and the people. Well, it was the Republicans were desperately trying to, you know, Falwell was running around calling it a gay plague, that kind of thing. God's,
oh, yeah.
You know, God's visitation of judgment on gay people, that kind of, but some folks figured out early on that you could probably get it without being gay. And so it sort of marked a not a pumping, but a slamming of the brakes of the so-called sexual revolution.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah,
and also by then, the herps had begun to make their rounds.
And we're talking about herpes, not Lyserpes.
No, we're not talking about Lyserpes. That's what you get if you blow the Green Giant.
Ew.
Sorry.
Keep your hands off my niblets, Bob.
Only you, Scott, could make a word like niblet sound like something filthy.
Oh, baby. Well, I've always admired the Green Giant. I even wrote a little bit of verse about him. Oh, see the Green Giant as he stands in the corn and peas. So...
Haiku, yes.
anyway, go ahead.
That's a time when it's entirely possible that, you know, maybe because by then, you know, he's in Yale. He's on his way out of Yale. He graduates Yale in 1987. He's going to go off to law school, blah, blah, blah. And maybe at that point in time, he begins to wise up and think, you know, I don't want to die from having sex. By the way, I got to share this because I didn't think about it in these terms. I was thinking about it only in terms of credibility, but Darlene in Connecticut points out, I thought the implication of Avenatti's client having many top security clearances means that Kavanaugh's predatory sexual behaviors didn't stop at Yale, but may even be more recent history. Wow. That's sober. So it may, you know, at this point, it's beginning
stories
to feel like pattern and practice. And what I want to know is, what do the Republicans expect, Scott, if they can get their boy on the court, that everybody's just going to forget about it? You know, I asked a question the other day about, how would the women on the court respond to Kavanaugh being there? And I mentioned having been told, you know, we've got to have civility. Well, lo and behold, I got a story here coming out of Michigan where a judge who was appointed by Republicans
heard a case regarding gerrymandering in Michigan. Michigan Supreme Court Justice Elizabeth Clement and there was a case regarding a ballot measure that will let a nonpartisan outside group redistrict the state without regard to Republican power plays. And she voted in favor of that idea. Well, since then, she has been shunned by her party and by the other Republicans on the court.
No surprise there.
So, I all that vaunted civility, you know, I-O-K, I-Y-A-R.
Well, in the 60s, 50s, into the 60s, there was a fair amount, and I think the John Birch Society had something to do with this, the impeach Earl Warren.
The man who, and the principal champion of that in the House of Representatives was one Gerald Ford.
Yeah, well, I didn't know that, but that kind of makes sense, because he's up from that, you know, Grand Rapids is a hotbed of, well, hell, Michigan.
Well, I mean, isn't that where Betsy DeVos and the Princes and the DeVoses and, you know, the $10 million cabins with 8 bathrooms and 3 bedrooms, that's that neck of the woods, isn't it?
Well, yeah.
10 yachts. What do you do with 10 yachts, Scott? Do you sail Yacht 1 to Yacht 2, get off Yacht 1, get on Yacht 2, sail Yacht 2 to Yacht 3, get off Yacht 2, get on Yacht... What?
Well, it's symptomatic of what is missing on a very deep level with these people, that they're using all these goodies to distract them from their basic angst. Is what it is. I mean, you know, I think, and this will probably amaze you, but I think of Rush Limbaugh sometime, and the fact that he lost his hearing for all intents and purposes. He had trouble with addiction, and there were a number of things in life that he went to just as a person, a human being. And none of these opportunities, these crossroads, these impactful, pivotal moments, it never occurred to him during any of these to maybe take stock of his situation on a metaphysical, existential level, and start doing right. You know, like Mark Twain said, always do right. It will gratify some and astonish the rest. And I know the lure of the sugar tit is powerful, indeed. The power is powerful, okay? The lure of power and money and prestige and, you know, wealth and all of that that go with it. But you talk about 10 yachts. If you gave me 10 yachts, I would sell them, all 10. I wouldn't keep one to while away the days on.
I mean, if you've got 10 yachts, does someone give you the nickname Yahtzee?
Well, I was going to go there, but I figured if I didn't, you would. So, but I I've got my blazer on and my captain's hat.
I christen thee the Flying Wasp.
But, you know, it's a lot of people in this country, especially a lot of the younger people, realize that there's more to this whole thing than, you know, the yuppie notion of whoever dies with the most toys wins. Okay? They understand the value of values and the value of, you know, to the extent that someone is suffering, we're all suffering. And the notion of responsibility taken and creating a world that works for everybody involved in a positive, appropriate way. And that, if I have any hope at all with the younger generations, it's that they, because they are more finely attuned with things that, to things that count, things that truly matter, that there's some hope to be had from that, you know, and they've certainly got their work cut out for them. And I plan to live, I've been told I'm going to make it to age 89. So that's a few years down the road, but I imagine they'll be still hard at it, you know, when I'm, you know, gone, you know, and quite cold. If we're still here. See, that's the other risk you run. In order to play a good game, you've got to have a playing field on which to play. And this saber-rattling orange asshat, you know, he may forestall that. He may, you know, eliminate that possibility if given half a chance. And his enablers and his supporters and his apologists, I hope to God that they're, you know, they talk about don't be too confident about a blue wave. I hope, pardon me, I hope there's a course correction of a large magnitude come November. You know, because we got to hit the reset button. You know, even if it's a tiny punch as opposed to really mashing that son of a gun. I didn't mean to rant, but it, you know, I keep going back to the basics, because the basics will see you through, you know, when all is said and done. And we've forgotten the basics. We've forgotten the basics that our country operated so successfully on in large part for so many years. And we've forgotten our history, that in those previous times when we've forgotten the basics and go careening off the road, you know, the people are wise enough and strong enough to ease that person out of the driver's seat and put a responsible driver in, okay? And that's the only thing that's going to come close to saving us, is to take responsibility for seeing to it that we change things, that we have that course correction. Your thoughts, Bob?
No fair. I will simply reiterate what I've been saying. There will not be a blue wave unless you've got a turnout north of 70% on the Democratic side of the equation. It has got the stay-at-homes. Whenever someone goes after the precious little greenies and stuff, they'll say,
"Yeah, but what about the 48% of Americans that stayed home?"
And they have a point. And of course, the other, you know, some of those people would have voted for Trump if they'd gotten out. Maybe, you know, they were so dualist they couldn't be bothered to vote. Maybe they all would have. Maybe it would have been a fucking landslide. Maybe it would have been the popular vote too. Who knows? But the stay at homes went a long way to giving us Donald Trump. The people who were pouting and the people who were, you know, never Hillary-ing and all of that wicked crap.
Yeah.
The people whose precious ephemeral consciences couldn't hold up against the reality of trying to protect their fellow Americans' fucking access to health care. You know, those people.
Well, let me quote Let me quote Edward G. Robinson in the movie The Ten Commandments. Where's your Moses now? Where's your Moses now? You know? I say that in regards to their delicate little consciences.
How's your conscience feel about children being kidnapped and put in fucking concentration camps? But that's not that. My only point is that it has got to be overwhelming. And there need to be some shocks. There needs to be some absolutely rock solid, no two ways about it, safe Republicans who get bounced out on their goddamned ears.
Yeah. Now you put kind of a proviso in that, in order for a blue wave, there would have to be a 70% voter participation on our side or overall.
No, our side.
Yeah, it would have to be our side. Let's say we can't afford. It's like selling.
I mean, okay. Caskets. Wait.
Wait a minute. It's like selling caskets. You've got they show you the top of the line one first, which you know you can't afford, and then they go slowly down the model line until they get one that fits your budget. Okay. Let's say we don't want to go that basic, that bare bones. Let's say we want a mid-range option in terms of our selection. Let's say we can't really deal with the notion of a massive blue wave. What kind of turnout would we need to get a perfectly adequate, unquestionable, actually making a difference type of wave?
I'm not inclined to bargain with you over this, Scott.
Well, no, I'm not.
Let me.
I'm just curious.
No, but I know, but I mean, I'm not being insincere when I say 70%. I'm being deadly honest, because and let me use and when I say I'm not, that sounded kind of shitty. I didn't mean it to sound like that way. I'm being playful and theoretical. But let's look at Alabama and the Senate race. Okay. And I don't want to take away anything from anybody who busted their asses in that race to keep a goddamn elf diddler out of the Senate.
Now, there's an image I'll need the eye watch.
Well, no, I mean, Christmas is on the way. We've already had the declaration of the war on Christmas by that goofy woman. But I can never look at Santa's helper in the mall ever again.
Yeah, that whole thing last
thinking about Roy Moore skeeving up. You know, sure do got a pretty mouth. You want to meet me in the woods? Hey.
Well, it ruined A Christmas Story for me, Bob. One of the pivotal scenes is when the kid who wants the BB gun meets Santa Claus, and that the department store's got all these little Santa's helpers. That just, I couldn't watch it past year.
So anyway, in Alabama, the margin of victory was achieved in large part by a dedicated turnout from the African-American community, and in particular, African-American women, who just said, oh, hell no, while all the evangelical white women said, if he wanted to diddle a little bit 30 years ago, that's all right by me. He loves Jesus. And the evangelical men, who to the tune of 72%, said the same thing. 65% of evangelical women and 72% of evangelical white men.
That sounds right.
But here's the difference. The literal margin of victory was the 21,000 Republican voters who voted for somebody else, or wrote in a name, or a third-party candidate, whatever.
Yeah.
That was literally the margin of victory. In other words, if the African-American women don't show up, then those Republicans who just couldn't stomach it would not have been able to prevent Roy Moore from going to the Senate. Okay?
Because in the bottom line, it is a numbers game.
And so if you're talking to a certain extent, you've got to separate out Senate from House. Because houses are districted, and the districts are brutally gerrymandered and just as corrupt as all hell.
Yeah.
The Senate is a statewide race. But nonetheless, if you're going to overcome both the soft and the hard voter suppression for which the Republicans are notorious, I mean, you've got Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, out there sending little old ladies campaign flyers masquerading as court summonses.
Yeah, Jesus.
Okay, this is the stock in trade of the Republican Party. And if you're going to overcome all of that, and if you're going to overcome maggot enthusiasm, and if they get Kavanaugh onto the court, they're going to feel like they need to go and reward the Republican Party for doing what they said they'd do, and they'll have the bit in their goddamn teeth, then you've got to have a monumental turnout. And then where the Senate's concerned, you still need a few miracles here and there.
Yeah.
You got to have Phil Bredesen hold on in Tennessee. It would be nice if Heller went down in Nevada.
Yeah.
You got to have Kyrsten Sinema win in Arizona. You got to have Joe Manchin and Joe Donnelly and Heidi Heitkamp. Now, to be fair,
don't forget McCaskill in Missouri.
Well, yeah, true. But she's already said she's voting against Kavanaugh.
Oh, okay, sorry.
The one that kind of got all over me, though, was the case out of North Dakota. The guy who's running against Heidi Heitkamp, a guy named Kevin Kramer. He can't seem to keep his foot out of his mouth with regard to Kavanaugh. And interviewed with KX4 TV, he said he completely believes Brett Kavanaugh. But then came this. What if something like what Dr. Ford describes happened? It's tragic. It's unfortunate. It's terrible. It should never happen in our society. But what if there's 36 years of a record where there's nothing like that again, but instead there's a record of a perfect gentleman, an intellect, a guy who's been a stellar judge, even if it's all true? Does that disqualify him?
Jesus.
I mean, this is the way that Republicans fucking think. This is how filthy they are. No, does it ruin his life? No, he should probably make amends. He should apologize and try to do something to show that he has learned and he's changed, if for no other reason than the sake of his daughters. But yeah, it should disqualify him from the Supreme Court because he has now lied about it, goddammit. He has lied like a rug. And remember, judges are not supposed to avoid impropriety. They are supposed to avoid the appearance of impropriety. And there is nothing but the appearance of impropriety all over Brett Kavanaugh.
And we're not talking about those particular types of offenses. We're talking about the possibility existing of all kinds of offenses across the board that we would find out about if there were an investigation that was actually an investigation.
Right. I mean, this is all stuff that's straight out of Robert Penn Warren's All the King's Men, my favorite 20th century English language novel.
You know, I've never read that.
Oh, you owe it to yourself. If you read it once, you'll read it once a year ever after. There's always something. Man is conceived in sin and dieth in iniquity. From the stink of the deity to the stench of the shroud, there is always something. And that's a very grim assessment of American politics, but it's largely true. And you know, to be fair, there's no love lost between me and Ann's boy Neil Gorsuch. But the fact of the matter is, he went to the same goddamn Georgetown prep that Brett Kavanaugh did. There were no stories of him trying to get all rapey with a girl 2 years younger than him in high school from some Catholic girls' school. There were no stories of him being dedicated and consecrated to the idea of drinking 100 kegs of beer before he left high school. He was as vetted. And look at the difference. There's some. Granted, he's a soulless son of a bitch who would gladly have had a man freeze to death, a black man freeze to death in his truck instead of walking for help. But you see what? And meanwhile, you got this guy who's running against Heidi Heitkamp, who says that even if everything that's said about Brett Kavanaugh is true, you know, and putting his penis in a woman's face when she was drunk, and the puking and the carrying on, and the gambling debts, and the possibly unresolved alcoholism, and all of that. Well, does that disqualify him? And see, I'm a little historically short here, Scott, because I don't know the history of the drinking and partying habits of Chief Justice John Marshall or Roger Taney. Two who come immediately to mind.
You look at somebody like Ben Franklin, who was a bit of a carouser.
Hell, Ben was a rake.
And
he was the darling. He was the darling of the salons of Paris.
Oh, of course. Of course. But I'm thinking that I'm sure through history, some of that type of thing has gone on. But in terms of what you're asking about, and especially in light of
John Marshall, to the best of my knowledge, was a slave owner. So that means he probably spent his fair share of time down in the quarters, just like Thomas Jefferson did.
Well, one might presume.
And that, by the way, is rape.
If you own something, you always like to get good and use and enjoyment.
Careful, 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 careful. You are on slippery ground.
Well, I'm talking about the mindset of people who were slave owners back then. That's how they viewed black people. Okay.
Well, I mean, in Jefferson's case, it was also because Sally Hemings probably looked a lot like his dead wife because she was her half-sister. Because his wife's daddy had been going down to the quarters.
Jesus.
I mean, that's what I mean when I say that, you know, when that damn fool woman who went after Jason Isbell, you know, she obviously, the propaganda of white guilt. You know, fuck, lady. It's called history. It's not white guilt. It's just history. The third president of the United States was a goddamned unrepentant, constant fucking rapist.
Well, why do you think radical school boards, especially in the South, why do you think they are so heavily editing and are so selective in terms of their history textbooks?
Yeah, nobody's gonna teach that in the old Dominion of Virginia.
Oh, hell no.
And they're not gonna teach it anywhere else in the United States either, because you know, Jefferson stands in a deified status, and we can't talk about him as a human being.
And it's unfair to subject him to our modern morals. He was a man ahead of his time.
It might have been ahead of his time, but by God, he was. You know, when you build a woman a room on your mansion that doesn't have any goddamn windows in it, so you can go in and have your way with her at your will. Excuse me.
That's way
on out there. But let me just point out that Brother Deacon Asa pointed out in regard to it.
In other words, a mere blue wave is inadequate. We need a fucking blue tsunami, and that is exactly it.
Well, there you go.
But I want to make sure everybody else gets in on the program that wants to, Scott. It's been a great conversation, and I appreciate it. And enjoy the pipe, man. Enjoy the pipe.
You saw that photo, the little German pipe.
You were downright deboner.
Before I go, and this is quick, I just want to say hats off to our friend Steve in Georgistan. We had a little email exchange in the past couple of days about movies, and I have enjoyed those thoroughly, you know, hearing from him and interacting in that way. I think I friended him on Facebook. I hope it was him, but I didn't hear back. So I don't even know if he's on Facebook much. But
I hear from him on Messenger more than I see stuff on Facebook. But
okay. Well, anyway, if he hears this, maybe he'll check his inbox for friend requests and get hooked up through Facebook.
All right. All right. Sounds good.
Anyway, yes, Bob. As always, good conversation. And you take care, and I hope we get the blue tsunami that we all so desperately need.
Here, Scott. Here. Take care, my friend. Our buddy Scott in San Diego. So let's go over to the stress line, and we got, I think, JR in Ohio.
Am I on, really?
You really are.
Oh, my God. I've been on all this time. I've just been listening.
Yeah, it's just a matter of me potting you up.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm finally calling Mr. Kincaid after being a listener for at least a decade at this point. And I'm a little nervous, actually. I don't make calls to
well,
the radio station.
That's okay.
Before.
That's okay. Breathe. You're going to be fine. It's just us. There's nobody else listening.
But I was at a dentist chair for 3.5 hours this afternoon, so that was kind of what my day was like. And but I wanted to just thank you for doing what you do. And, you know, I know I'll speak for myself, but you got me through some crazy times. You know, because a lot of us, we don't, you know, people don't talk the way they used to or communicate the way they used to or even talk on the phone the way they used to. So, you know, it's all text and Facebook and this and that, and I find that I always say we have more communication at our disposal and less communication going on than ever before.
Yeah.
So it's good to have an actual phone conversation. Now, I was just actually, the story just hit the Daily News about Kavanaugh. That's what I call him, Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh, apparently, he's left it reputation here, but the gang rape story has broke on the Daily News. I just was looking at it, but then you picked up the phone. So apparently, just from the couple graphs I read of it, he and his entitled high school buddies used to put these parties together around Georgetown and the upper echelons of D.C. and get girls drunk and pull trains and whatnot. I think you already mentioned it before, but I guess it's officially out there now. So, but I still believe the guy's going to get it. I really do. These folks that run things, they claim to, you know, aspire to some high moral plane, but when it gets down and dirty, they don't give a fuck. You know, if they did, we wouldn't have this asshole in front the tangerine, Donald the Terrible as president. I lived in New York for about all through the 80s and 90s, and I knew Donald Trump. I mean, I didn't know him, but I knew of him. Everybody in New York knew of him because he made sure that you knew of him. Because he's a media whore, of course, among other kinds of whores. If you said the word Donald Trump to somebody in New York, first thing out of the mouth would say it would be asshole. So I've been particularly terrified to watch his rise to power. And I'm sure a lot of my fellow former New Yorkers also are as well. I knew he was a dirtbag. You know, back in 1983, you know, And everybody that in New York knew it too. And not only that, he did not carry his own city. That's telling right there in itself. He may have carried Staten Island, but Staten Island, it's a kind of a world unto itself. Not, it's very Republican and has been historically. I find all this, I don't know. I don't know what to say. But I'm glad I'm not the only one who feels this, almost daily dread of, turning on the news or looking at the headlines or hearing, the latest outrage. And it's just very demoralizing. So I'm glad that we have people like you out there allowing us to get rid of some of our angst, because it can be overwhelming. My sister put up a post about the Trump derangement syndrome. And, that's the real thing. I was at a party. I hadn't seen a friend of mine since before the election. He hates them as much as I do, and Republicans in general. I hate them, too. And I have some of my family that I haven't even been talking to for quite some time at this point. I said to him, and this was in July, I said, my day since he has been elected, have been colored by this shroud of insanity that I don't want to get too florid here with my language, but I just every day it's like we're living in a shitstorm. And when's it going to end? I don't know.
No one does. You don't know when it's going to end, because there's nothing to indicate that there's an end in sight.
Well, not only that,
and to be fair, I keep saying it, but I can't keep up, and I start every 3-hour program here with a pretty solid list of stuff I want to get through, and it seems impossible. Or if I start out the day saying, I think we're going to lead with this, by five o'clock in the afternoon, it's something altogether different.
I think we all have, maybe not Trump derangement syndrome, but Trump fatigue. But anyway,
that's what it is. It's exhausting. It's exhausting.
Yeah, it is exhausting, it is exhausting. And I feel it really colors just our day-to-day lives. I mean, just what I see going on out in the street. I live in Columbus, and I live in the inner city. This neighborhood is just about ready to start its gentrification process. And I guess you could say I was part of it, because I moved here. I moved here 4 years ago. And, I moved here because I couldn't afford to live in the tonier neighborhoods north of OSU that are, the most, one of them is considered one of the most liberal neighborhoods in America, Clintonville. And I couldn't afford to live there anymore. So I ride the bus. I don't have a car. I'm still a New Yorker in that regard. And I moved down here to the Mid East Side so I can be close to downtown and close to my job. And my job is actually in the neighborhood. So I am in this environment a good deal of my life, and it's the lower socioeconomic environment, largely African American neighborhood, and it's not getting better out here for them. So when I see this guy at the UN blustering about how he's done more, well, he didn't say what he did was better. He just said he's done more than almost any other administration. So he didn't qualify it with better but still, it's not getting better. And I think people are feeling worn down. And I'm just hoping that doesn't affect the turnout. Now, just down the block, a group, I'm not sure who's opened this up, and I'm sure it was connected with the Check Your Register registration, because Ohio is one of those states where they're just trying to, steal the right to vote from hundreds of thousands of people here, as you well know, probably, if you read the news. And Mike DeWine is one of the ones who's been the architect of that. He's running for governor. I hope he doesn't get it, but I'm afraid he will. But At any rate, I didn't see any large crowds outside that little storefront they opened up just a couple days ago. You know, to get people registered to vote, and that's discouraging to me. I've seen nobody in there except a couple people that work in there. I'm hoping that changes. I think the deadline here is October 10th, if I'm not mistaken. I'm not sure, but I know it's coming up. So I've been trying to encourage everyone to vote because we do need that massive turnout. That's the only way they're not going to steal it. Because I'm telling you, in Ohio, they steal elections. And that's why Balder ass, I call him, was that election was stolen. It just was. And it was, Ohio was stolen from Bush in 2004.
Well, and that's part of why I say what I do about a blue tsunami. Because
yeah, we need active turnout. Anybody who can vote, even if you think you're going to be turned away, show your.
Well, I mean, this is a reality. 2016, 2014, 2012, and 2010. But definitely 12 and 14. On a net basis, Democrats got more popular votes for their candidates for House of Representative than Republicans did, by a pretty broad margin.
Well, a lot of these
and it didn't matter because of the way the gerrymandering is, it was all canceled out.
Right.
So the only way you get around that is by winning some of those gerrymandered districts with massive, massive, shocking turnout.
Well, I'm hoping for the best. I'm hoping for the best. I know I'll be voting. I think I've only missed one election since I was eligible to vote, which would have been in 1978, because that was the year I came to 18. I was a couple years older than you. I think I've only missed one election and maybe, you know, a couple like local initiative things that I really didn't have a stake in. But I'm telling everybody we've got to be out there in full force this year because it is a matter of life and death. I think it's a huge turning point in this country. It's going to determine whether, you know, the Koches, the Kochs, or however the fuck you say their name, and their ilk, and the crypto corporate fascist, I'm going to have to come up with a really good term for that, but, you know, that triumvirate of I think it's pure evil, personally, they will control everything if the Republicans continue their grip on power. That's just, it's not going to be good for anybody. And I work with kids, and, you know, they're not in a good place. The kids I work with around, a lot of them live around here. They are angry. They are confused. They are uneducated, unsocialized. They see the behavior of some of the adults like Donald Trump and see that, like that. So why shouldn't I act like an asshole? None of them like Donald Trump because I have yet to meet a black person who does. But nevertheless, you know, they take their cues from what they see on TV and in the news and also from some other sources. I'm not going to go into that whole argument tonight. But nevertheless, you know, I don't see them. I think they know what they're up against. They know it's not going to be pretty for them. So why even bother? You know? So anyway, I guess that's why I'm there. Tell them there is a reason to bother. So, at any rate, I do not want to tie up your line because I do want to let other people call. I like to hear a lot of different voices on your show. There's a couple that used to call. Actually, when I started listening, what hooked me to your show was listening to Sandra when she was calling because she would just have me blacking up. And there would be like days where I just did not, you know, I had a rough day, whatever. And when you and her would get on your wrist, I would just laugh my ass off. But even though I haven't heard Sandra being on the show for a couple years now, at least, there's other callers I like listening to, and of course, I always love listening to what you got to say because I think you're one of the most eloquent commentators out there. So now that I've dusted and done my fan club bit, I'm going to let you go, but I will call in again.
I hope you do. I mean, you've survived nicely. We haven't heard any thuds as you struggled with fainting and hitting the floor or anything. As I've said a million times before, if you can't have a comfortable conversation on this program,
something I admire from afar. So I've been thinking about calling for years. So it was a big hurdle for me.
Well, I'm glad you finally cleared it. Now you see how easy it is. You can do it anytime you want to.
Fantastic. Well, I won't do it all the time. I'll pace myself, and I don't want to dominate the airwaves. So, but I've enjoyed talking to you tonight. Thanks for taking my call. It's almost 5:00 time. Actually, I might have to listen to somebody else tonight. There's a black woman I like to listen to on Facebook. She does adult talk with Tammy PA on Facebook at 8:30. She started a few minutes ago. I'm sure she'll have lots of interesting things to say about Cosby and Kavanaugh, because as I mentioned earlier on Facebook, funny that, Cosby's going to jail and some guy who's basically accused of doing the same kind of shit is getting fitted for his robes, his Supreme Court robes, here in a couple days. But she'll have some interesting things to say. But usually I switch over to Mike Malloy. I've been listening to him for years too.
Oh, so. Yeah. And you know what's hilarious? Theoretically, if Kavanaugh makes it onto the Supreme Court, if there's any kind of an appeal of the sentencing going up, Kavanaugh could sit in judgment of it.
Exactly.
Even if it's just a petition for review, he could say yay or nay.
Yeah. Well, the stories that he and Slappy will be able to tell and giggle back and forth when they're sitting up there on that high bench.
Well, there's all kinds of hijinks. Maybe Brett can start out by leaving a pube on Slappy's Coke can.
Thank you. That was the best laugh I had all day. Well, so with that, I will let you go before we descend further into the gutter of government. Take care of yourself.
All right. You have a good evening. Take care.
I will talk to you soon.
All right. Bye now.
I escaped, by the way. Not JR. That's just my fake Facebook name.
Oh, Jake, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can call me Jake.
All right. We'll call him Jake. See you, Jake.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye now. That's our buddy Jake. First time call after 10 years of listening. You see, it can be done. And it is time to get on out the door. I want to just offer up one little thing before we leave. This is a clip from CNN.
That's our buddy Jake.
Now, wait a minute. Why did... I had that muted, damn it. How did it unmute? Okay. Well, it's not unmuted anymore. Okay. This is a clip from CNN. And there's a phrase that's going to be used, and I just want to see if everybody recognizes it.
Right. Carl, I don't know how he can know that they're false accusations when the hearings...
This is Carl Bernstein and Allison Camerota chatting about, Rosenstein, Kavanaugh, etc. But there's one phrase...
haven't happened yet. And to your point about truth, how will people, if it's really just truly he said, she said at that point, because the FBI isn't investigating and no other witnesses are called, how will we get to the truth?
I don't know, quite honestly, but I think one thing we need to understand is the larger context of all of this, and that is that we are in a cold civil war in this country.
And there it is. Now, Carl Bernstein is a multimillionaire, highfalutin, for-profit media journalist. This is the guy from... I coined that phrase years ago now. And I've been talking about the Cold Civil War. So, hey, hi to Carl out there in Horn Radio, Horn Community Land. Like I said before,
You want to be so far out in front of the curve that it feels like you're on straight road? Hang out with us here in the Horn Family Community Congregation. Wowzer. That just kind of blew my mind when I saw it. So it's time to get out of here. Thank you to everyone who shares your precious finite time engaged in this little program. Thank you to all of you who keep the program on the air with your kind gifts. Thank you to our subscribers. Thank you very kindly to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.